Okay, but let's learn. So we're going to be starting the 8th paragraph of Maseches Yoma. Yoma literally means the day. It's a reference to Yom Kippurim. Yoma Kippurim, Maseches Yoma, or Yoma. Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. It's 146. In the Gemaras you have in front of you have a number of different Maseches in them. Maseches Yoma, page 146. Ayin Gimel Beis, beginning of the 8th paragraph. The first 7 prakim of Maseches Yoma, you're looking for 73b. The first 7 prakim of Maseches Yoma deal with the day of Yom Kippur, specifically regarding the Kohen Gadol. All of the restrictions on the Kohen Gadol in the week leading up to Yom Kippur, what he does on the night of Yom Kippur, what he does during the day of Yom Kippur, the Avoda, all of the sacrifices he offers, the Kabbanos, all of that is dealt with in the earlier parts of the Masechta. And the 8th parak finally gets to what's relevant to us every year, which are the 5 major prohibitions of Yom HaKippurim. And so the Mishnah lists them. But let me start with the following question. How many times does the Torah say, thou shall not eat on Yom Kippur? How many different references do we have to the prohibition of thou shall not eat?
At least once.
Incorrect.
No.
Does it have any?
Zero, correct.
Zero.
Yes,
zero.
There's correct. We do not have that formulation of a prohibition of thou shalt not eat, which is a normal formulation of a prohibition. Instead, what the Torah says on Yom Kippur, 5 different times it says the language of vi'inisem. Vi'inisem is from the language of inui. Inui is from the language of affliction, like we find in Mitzrayim when the Egyptians, vaya'anunu, they afflicted us. And it gave us avodah kasha, difficult labor. So 5 times the Torah says on Yom Kippur, v'inisem es nafsho sechem, some language of afflicting oneself or holding oneself back from pleasurable activities. And the Gemara derives in this parak, which I don't think we'll get that far into it before we switch back to something else, before Yom Kippur actually arrives. It's possible. You don't sell yourself short. I know, I see. You're already disappointed. I don't even say such a thing like that. We might get to it, in which the Gemara is going to derive the following 5 items are reflections of what it would then mean to afflict yourself. So the Gemara says as follows. Yom HaKippur, the Mishnah says as follows. Yom HaKippur Asur Ba'achila Uvishtia. On Yom Kippur, it's forbidden to eat and to drink. Uvirachitza, to wash, can't wash with water. Uvisicha, or anoint with oil. Uvine'ila Sasandal, too. Or not just oil, any type of ointment. Ne'ilas sandal, wearing shoes. Uvitashmi shamita, and marital relations. All of those things are forbidden on Yom HaKippurim. Rashi points out, as I'm sure all of you noticed, I mentioned that there are 5 times that the Torah says the word inoy, 5 afflictions and 5 major prohibitions. How many did we just list? 6. We actually listed 6. And Rashi points out, I knew there'd be an accountant in the room, or a wannabe accountant. Rashi points out, achila and shtia, eating and drinking, really is the same. That counts as one. That's really under the same prohibition to eat or to drink, meaning to consume food. And then we have number 2, rechitza, washing. Number 3, anointing oneself with some type of ointment. 4, wearing shoes. And 5, tashmish hamita. The Gemara also derives, very, very important, what's the punishment for violating the requirements of inoy? Let's say I indulge myself. What's the punishment? What does the Torah say? Kares, Chiyav Kares, is spiritually being cut off, a very, very severe punishment. The Gemara derives that punishment is only true or applicable for eating and drinking. Out of these 5, there are clearly 2 categories. There's the category of achila ushtia, eating and drinking is one. If one does eat or drink on Yom Kippur, that brings about a chiyav kares. The other 4 manifestations of afflicting oneself or holding oneself back, of washing, anointing, wearing shoes, or marital relations, are not on the level of eating or drinking, and it's a major discussion amongst the Rishonim whether or not it is Torah law or it's only the rabbis understand. What level do we place those? But the level of Chiyav Kares is clearly only, the Gemara derives only for Achila and Shtia. Okay, be that as it may, that is our opening line of this parak, the prohibited activities of Yom Kippur. Well, it depends on how you learn it. In other words, whether or not you learn it as a Torah law, or whether or not it's more rabbinically based. So exactly, it could be that even rabbinic you get makas, but it only be makas marjus. Yeah, but certainly not karis. Certainly not karis. Okay, the mission then continues. Part two of our mission, part two of three, is
the reason for karis. I think is because it says v'nichrosah nefesh.
Correct. I know the pasuk says the nichra. So the question is, on what is that going on? The Gemara derives, and I don't think, I'm not sure we'll get to that Gemara, but it's clearly only a reference to eating
another
and drinking.
Another meaning, I think, in the Torah is referring to rape.
Referring
to a
yeah.
woman, to someone who has been raped. I think they use that same.
Correct. Term. In the a form of an affliction in that sense. I mean, correct. Okay. Part two of our mission are exceptions. Are there any exceptions? Now, there's not going to be an exception listed as far as eating or drinking goes, because that's the most severe. In modern-day times, we have a number of exceptions when it comes to health issues, but the mission is going to give us a number of exceptions where the other remaining four are sometimes relaxed. Says the mission, HaMelech V'Hakala. What are those two out of the three exceptions? A king and a bride, Yirchatsu Es Pneihem, are allowed to wash their faces. Even though washing is one of the five prohibited activities, on Yom Kippur, a king or a bride, even on Yom Kippur, are allowed to wash their faces. Why are kings and brides given this exception, this dispensation? So Rashi says a king, because it is his way and his praise to be no'eh, to be beautiful. Because the pasuk itself says, the pasuk in Yeshayahu says, "Melech biofyo techezena einecha." Your eyes should always behold the king in his beauty. Part of the grandeur of the king and the awe and reverence that we have for a king is that he always be in a position of grandeur and of beauty. For example, the Mishnah says in Maseches Sanhedrin that he has to have a haircut every day in order to be presentable in that certain way. Every day he has to have a haircut. So, one of the exceptions here, this is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, says another manifestation of that is that he has to look beautiful. He can't show up to the Beis HaMikdash, he can't show up to Shul without having washed his face. And therefore we give special dispensation to the king to be able to wash his face. What about a kala? Why is a bride allowed to wash her face? So now she says, she needs beauty ad shetechavev al bala, until she becomes beloved to her husband. How long does that take? 30
days.
30 days. Shloshim yom, for 30 days.
Rashi,
right, that's what Rashi says. For 30 days, we give a kala. If a girl gets married within 30 days of Yom Kippur, she's allowed to wash her face, because that's that period of time, that initial month after marriage, is when the special bond will take place between the new bride and the new groom. And in order that she not look disheveled or unappealing in any way, even on Yom Kippur, even on Yom Kippur, we give her dispensation to be able to wash her face in order that she be mechavev al baila, that she become beloved to her husband. Yeah, it's for, you know, they don't generally adorn themselves, and I think without sounding too vain, you know, this might come out vain, but I think that's what's being taught here, is that a wife's appearance will significantly affect the relationship in the early stages, whereas a husband's appearance will far less so.
That's so, like saying men are more shallow.
Well, gee whiz.
I would
say, that be true?
I would say not that way.
That's just my way of...
No, I saw a clip from Dennis Prager. He has an entire series on sexuality. You know about Dennis Prager?
Yeah.
So he has a whole series on sexuality.
Pretty right-wing guy, no?
Yeah. And so he had a clip I forgot exactly what the title was, but what he was discussing was the difference between men and women in the way that they react to visual stimulation. And it was a 4-minute clip, in a very brilliant way, described how it is hardwired into men to be visually stimulated. When a man sees a woman's body, even in a visual way, even if it has nothing to do with him in terms of that there'll ever be any type of intimate contact, just the visual experience is one that is stimulating to a man. Whereas for a woman, does not have that same experience in simply seeing simply seeing a man's body. And he described, I think the springboard was an ad that was for a beer or a liquor or something or another, and the entire ad was a woman's legs. She was lying on a beach, but the only ad just showed from the waist down, just showed her wearing a bathing suit and her legs and a bottle on the sand. And he said, can you imagine having an ad with a man's legs and any product? Like, what in the world would that attract? Like, why would that wouldn't work? It's not of interest to anyone. And so he's just describing the human reality. He wasn't justifying any inappropriate behavior from men. He's just saying, but to deny the reality that there's a stimulation of sight that does not apply, that women don't have a vision alone without an emotional context. They just don't have it. Whereas men without an emotional context do have it. So in answer to Phil's question, so it doesn't mean that men are more shallow. It just means that during the first month of marriage, where visual stimulation is a reality of his experience, he needs to see his wife look beautiful, kadesha techaviv, as and for the relationship to develop. Whereas the woman's emotional connection to her husband isn't as contingent upon that visual stimulation. If he's being nice to her and caring for her and being sensitive and all the right things, he'll become chuvav al-liba just as well. Someone pointed out to me, Marcus Altman pointed out a very fascinating thing, that in this week's Parsha, the Torah describes the mitzvah of Eishes Yifas Toar, of a woman who's taken captive during war, and the Torah gives dispensation to a man at war to marry her. Even though she's a non-Jewish woman, and there's a whole process in terms of how exactly she converts, or does she really have to, exactly how it works. The Torah is clear, the major discussion in the Gemara exactly how to understand it, but what is clear in the Torah is that he cannot marry her until after a certain amount of time goes by in which she mourns her mother and her father, and she makes herself look disheveled. She has to grow out her hair, she has to grow out her nails, and then after that period, if he still desires her, then he's allowed to marry her. How long is it?
30 days,
exactly. So he pointed out a very beautiful ha'ara, a nice connection, that's the amount of time that she becomes disheveled, and if he still wants to marry this captive of war after 30 days of being disheveled, then we say, okay, fine, you can marry her. But that's like this amount of time, this unit that's used of for a new bride to take lechavev al baila, and for a husband to in the case of a captive at war, in which she becomes disheveled and unattractive in the attempt to make him not want to marry her.
Can she refuse?
Which one? The Eishes Hatzar? It doesn't seem that way. So those are the two exceptions. A Melech v'Akala, they wash their face. What about a Chaya? A Chaya is a woman who just had a baby. Tinelas HaSandal, she's allowed to wear shoes, Rashi explains. In those days, they didn't have Crocs, believe it or not. I know it's hard to imagine. Like, what'd they wear on Yom Kippur? They went barefoot. That's what they did on Yom Kippur. They went barefoot. You didn't wear shoes, you went barefoot. So in October, which is when Yom Kippur falls out most years, late September, early October, in many places in the world, not that I can think of any examples, it gets cold already by that time of year. So if you're on a stone floor in certain parts of Israel during the month of Tishrei when Yom Kippur falls, it's cold. So for a new mommy who just had a baby, to be without shoes was considered particularly unhealthy. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer has three exceptions. A king for grandeur reasons, a new bride to become beloved to her husband can wash their faces, and a new mommy is allowed to wear shoes. And the Chachamim, forbid all three of these behaviors. They do not accept any of these exceptions. But in Halacha, we do. In Halacha, we pass like Rabbi Eliezer that these three exceptions are applicable, and we do allow for those three exceptions. Okay, that's section number two of our Mishnah. Section number one, listing the five prohibited activities. Section number two, three exceptions according to Rabbi Eliezer, which is accepted in Halacha, the king, the bride, and the new mommy. And section number three of our Mishnah is, what's the shear? How much am I not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur? When am I in violation of this prohibition that I'm chayev kar, a person would be chayev kar is for eating on Yom Kippur? When does that kick in? Now, what's the normal shear? Kazayas. Kazayas is the shear of the olive is for everything. How much matzah do you have to eat on Pesach is a kazayas. We always use the shear of a kazayas. So here, however, it's different because the Torah never said, thou shall not eat. That's where we know what's considered eating. Eating is a kazayas. The Torah didn't say, thou shalt not eat. The Torah said, you must afflict yourself. Well, when am I not considered of being afflicted? When am I considered as having eaten so much that it's, I feel good. I feel satiated. I felt like I've eaten something substantial. So the Mishnah says, it's the amount of a date larger than an olive. Ha'ochel kakoseves hagasa. You ate a fully ripe, healthy date. Kimoya uchagri inta, together with its pit.
It's a big date.
It's a big date with the pit inside. That amount, that's the shear of achila on Yom Kippur, which means we're more stringent, or lenient, I should say, on Yom Kippur, that you will not be chay of the punishment until you eat more than you normally have to eat. For example, if you wanted to eat a cheeseburger, at what point would you be chay of malchus? When would we give you lashes for eating a cheeseburger? Kazayas, as soon as you eat the olive's worth, you've just eaten the amount, and now you're going to get malchus. But on Yom Kippur, you would not be chayav kares until you ate more than that. That's considered a more sustaining, fulfilling, satiating amount. And since the Torah said, it didn't say not eat, it said don't. It said to afflict yourself. So that's the shear of achila, the size of a date together with its seed. What about for drinking? So the Mishnah says, not the shear of a revius, but the shear of a male lugma, of a cheekful, filling the one whole side of your cheek with liquid. That's the shear, then you would be chayiv. And then the last halacha of the Mishnah, following up on this eating and drinking issue, is kol ha'oichlin mitstarfin lekakoseves. All foods combine to the shear of the kakoseves, of the dates. Meaning if you had a bite of cholent and a little potato kugel, and a piece of cake, and all three bites that you took were less than the shear, but in conjunction together, if you ate them all at the same time, they would be the full shear. So that's all that we care about. How much food did you eat? We don't care about what food did you eat. Did you eat food? And if you ate that shear of food, all the foods combined. And similarly, kol hamashkin mitzvah, all drinks, all liquids combined for the shear of the mali lugmov, or the cheekful. We don't care if you had a little bit of soda, a little bit of water, a little bit of wine, a little bit of grape juice. It doesn't matter. All the liquids combine into the shear. However, the Mishnah says, achila and shtia are not mitzdarev. So that if I had half a shear of food together with half a shear of liquid, so that doesn't matter. You're not chayav kares because you didn't violate achila.
Half, they don't necessarily mean half. They mean just
less. Less, right. You had less than what you needed to have eaten for food, less than what you needed for drink, and therefore, you would not be chayav kares, even though in total you had a lot, but you didn't have enough of either one of the two. So within foods, all foods combine. Within drinks, all liquids combine. But food and drink do not combine. And this is the reason why in today's modern day and age, which happens all the time, where there's a situation where people need to eat on Yom Kippur. It happens Maisa B'Choyim every year.
I have a cup like that.
Correct. Many people need to eat.
From Rav
Noah. For various reasons, whether for diabetes reasons, they're pregnant, nursing, they're not well, they're sick, whatever it may be, people need to eat on Yom Kippur and they are not allowed to fast. So we tell a person, this is how you eat on Yom Kippur. Since if you were to eat regularly, and you would eat more than the shear of a date, or more than the drink of a mali lugmav, that's chayav kares. Now, you're allowed to eat, but we don't want you to do it in a way that what you just did really should be chayav kares. That's terrible. So we tell you to eat what's called kishiurim. You eat in measure. And what you do is you always eat less than the amount that would be considered chayav kares.
And you wait.
Correct, because just like when it comes to matzah, just using it as an example, which we're going to get to again a couple times later, in matzah we say the opposite. You have to eat something to fulfill the mitzvah. So what happens if a person takes a crumb and eats a crumb of matzah? So we say, it's not yotze. How much do you have to eat? Kizayis. So we say, fine. So he takes a crumb now, and a crumb in 10 minutes, and a crumb in 10 minutes, and over the course of the entire night, from sunset until sunrise, over 12 hours, he eventually gets to a kizayis. So was that considered eating? Did he eat a kazayas? So say no, because there are two. You have to eat a certain amount within an amount of time that's considered. This is one eating. If it gets extended beyond that amount of time, that's not one eating. Now that's multiple eatings, and each eating didn't have enough within it. So you have to do it within an amount of time. So just like you have to eat matzah, what's called kadei achilas pras, within the amount that it takes to eat a unit of bread, so too with Yom Kippur, to violate, on the opposite side. You're only in violation of eating on Yom Kippur if you ate the shear within an amount of time, and opinions range within 4 minutes to 9 minutes, different opinions exactly what's that time frame that you have to eat in within what's to be considered in violation. So a person who needs to eat on Yom Kippur, so what we do is we tell them, let's be as, if we can, if assuming a person's able to, we'll be as strict as possible. We'll take the longest amount of shear and say that's what you can't do, 9 minutes. And we'll say, therefore, for you, every 10 minutes, you can eat just less than a shear of the date. And at the same time, you can drink just less than the amount of liquid, because since those two don't combine, you can do them both, and if you do them both every 10 minutes, you're never considered as having eaten in a way that you'd be chayav karet. So since you have to eat today, for whatever medical reason you have to eat, at least do it in a way that you never would be chayav kares anyway. You're eating less than that amount. And so the reality is, and most people who've had to do this can attest to, so it's generally considered about a solid ounce of liquid and a solid ounce of food. So you take a shot glass of about an ounce, you have that's your measuring rod, and you fill it with whatever you want to eat, grapes, food, children, you can eat children, whatever you want to. So you have about an ounce of food and an ounce of liquid in every 10 minutes. And over the course of 40 minutes, 50 minutes, that's already...
Why do you have to be sick for that? If it's not considered tahil, I can do it anyway.
Oh, well, that's our sugi. That's what we're getting to. I want to get to that. That question is literally going to be the topic of our conversation once today, tomorrow, next week. That's what we're talking about. But for somebody who's sick, so this way, since what they've done is not considered yet eating in a way that b'chayev kares, so that's the best way to eat on Yom Kippur. And then over the course of a day, they could do it all day long. It's plenty of food. And in my experience, my limited rabbinic experience, I've not had a person who needed to eat on Yom Kippur who that wasn't sufficient for. I'm sure it could happen, and then if it needs to be, it needs to be. But in general, the people who do need to eat over the course of the day, they get in enough liquid and enough food to be able to manage whatever issue that they need to manage, and that's certainly how we do it. Okay, that is the mission. Again, the five prohibited activities. Then we have the three exceptions. And then we have the halachas of eating and drinking, the shiurim, the date, and the cheekful. And that all foods combine, all drinks combine, but food and drink together do not combine to form a shiur. So far, so good? Let us move on. The Gemara begins with what it considers a very problematic language of the Mishnah. The Mishnah began with the language that there are five things which are prohibited on Yom Kippur. And the language that the Mishnah used to teach us that it's prohibited, which Hebrew word did the Mishnah use to teach us that it's forbidden? Aser. Yom HaKippurim, Aser ba'achilu v'shtiyah. Yom Kippur, it's forbidden to eat and to drink. Now, there are many different words that the Mishnah would use to teach a certain level of a prohibition. Sometimes it says, like our Mishnah says, that it's forbidden. Sometimes it says, just language of a person shouldn't do. Sometimes it says it as chayev kares, or chayev mis, like how, oh, someone who does this gets this punishment. The word us, or forbidden, is a lower level prohibition. It says, you're not allowed to do this. There are lots of things you're not allowed to do. The Mishnah says lots of things. Sometimes it's referring to not such important things, but you're not allowed to do it. Not allowed to do it. Not allowed to do it. Not even drinking. Eating and drinking is not something that's just not allowed. Eating and drinking on Yom Kippur is something. You're chayav karis, that's as bad as it gets. So the Gemara is very troubled by the way the Mishnah describes the prohibition of eating. Now again, there are other things in the Mishnah which it makes sense for. The washing, anointing, shoes, and marital relations, it makes sense because it does not carry the punishment of kares. But eating and drinking does. And so the Gemara is very troubled. I should have said, Ha'ochel ve'ashoyse b'yom ha'kippurim chayev kares. Say it in a way that makes me say, oh, this is serious. When you say it like this, yom ha'kippurim asur b'achila, it's okay, you know. Muksa is also asur on Shabbos, but muksa is a derabbanan, and muksa doesn't come close to touching the language of eating and drinking on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara is very troubled. What's with the low-level language to start our Mishnah? The Gemara asks it as follows. Aser in the Gemara. Aser? That's all you have to say? Anash karesu. It's not something that's just forbidden. It's something which carries a punishment of kares. And if, since that's what we're talking about, you should have, the Gemara asks on the Mishnah, express this prohibition in a way which reflects that. We are going to have two answers to this question. First answer is going to take us from here to the middle of the next daf, and then we're going to have a discussion of the second answer. So this next line is going to be what we're going to be working with for the next remainder of tonight, and for sure all of next week. And that answer is as follows. We have an answer suggested by Rabbi Elo, or some say it was Rabbi Yirmiya. Our Mishnah, says Rabbi Elo, you're right, for sure is not talking about a regular case of eating, because if it were talking about a regular case of eating, it would have to have used a much stronger language to reflect the problem of eating on Yom Kippur. The fact that it uses a low level, just it's forbidden, means that our Mishnah is not talking about eating on Yom Kippur a regular way. It's talking about Chatzi Shir, where you ate less than the prohibited amount. I ate half a date's worth.
Where did he come up with that?
Okay, let's work this through. Now, the Gemara is now going to introduce the Machlokas. Let's talk about this Machlokas outside, and then we'll get back to it inside the Mishnah. Let's talk about this as follows. What happens if, let's move it out of Yom Kippur. Let's just take a cheeseburger example. What's the deal if a person ate a single bite of a cheeseburger, less than a kazayas? How should we conceptualize what he did? The Torah said, lo tochlu, do not eat this food. And we know that we have a tradition when the Torah says not to eat it, what's the amount the Torah is talking about? A kazayas. I ate less than a kazayas. How do we conceptualize what this person did who went ahead and ate less than the amount of what the Torah said you can't eat?
Intentionally.
He saw the cheeseburger lying there. He saw that it was less than a kazayas. And he says, he learned in yeshiva, he knows that you're only chayev if you eat a kazayas. He says, less than a kazayas. So he goes ahead and eats it. How should we conceptualize that act of eating less than what the Torah said? So the Mishnah presents, the Gemara is going to present a machlokas, two opinions, fascinating approaches. Rabbi Yochanan says, what do you mean? It's forbidden. The Torah forbade eating this food. You're not allowed to eat it. What's the deal with the kazayis? What's the value? What does it mean when the Torah told us a shear of a kazayis? That's only the amount that if you eat, you'll get the punishment, you get the penalty. When the Torah said you're not allowed to eat treif, it meant ever. The food is intrinsically a prohibited food. You can't eat it. We have a tradition that it's a kazayis. Yes, that's the shear that if you ate that amount of it, you're going to get malchus, you'll get the punishment, but you're not allowed to eat any of it ever, and it's forbidden min ha-Torah to eat even a bite, even a morsel, it's prohibited. It's the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish, we're going to see in a moment, says, not at all. Torah says, thou shalt not eat. What's considered eating?
Kazayas.
If you eat less than a kazayas, that is not forbidden. The Torah did not forbid that act. You're not eating. That's not called eating. Now, it's an amazing dispute. We're going to talk about this a lot in terms of how to visualize and conceptualize such a dispute. Just as far as trying to understand it, let's talk about matzah for a minute. Let's say a person ate half a kazayis of matzah at the Leil of the Seder. He sits down, he takes a full bite, says, I can't eat this stuff. It's terrible this year. And he ate half a kazayis. He ate 3/4 of a kazayis. So we say to him, you need to eat more. He says, I'm not eating anymore. He says, then you won't fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah. He's going to say, I ate matzah. True or not? Truly. I mean, the man ate matzah. But what's the halacha? Is he yotze or not yotze? It's not yotze. Because even though the words of the pasuk says, Ba'erev tochlu matzos, on this night you must eat matzah, and you ate matzah, but what do we say to him? You didn't really eat matzah, or you didn't eat enough matzah. Now that we can all agree on, everybody would say, you didn't eat enough matzah. Even though he's going to argue, I ate. We say, yeah, in English, you use the words, you ate matzah, or even in Hebrew, achalti, but you didn't fulfill that which the Torah said, and therefore we look at you like you didn't eat matzah. So now let's reverse that. I ate a cheeseburger, or a person ate a cheeseburger, and he ate less than a shear. Can he say the same argument? He said, on Pesach, you told me I didn't eat. I said I ate. You said I didn't eat. If you told me on Pesach that I didn't eat, then I'll tell you on Tuesday night, I didn't eat the cheeseburger. Can he make such an argument? Yeah. No, interesting argument, yeah? So Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it doesn't work that way. When the Torah prohibits cheeseburgers, it prohibited the shear is only when you get punished. Rish Lakish says, it's a good argument. We told you on Pesach, you didn't eat. You can tell us on a Tuesday night, I didn't eat. And Rish Lakish is going to argue, chatzi shear, mutter min haTorah. A half of the shear is permitted from the Torah. You can eat it. Take it and eat it. Now, before you go out and buy a cheeseburger, we're not done with the sugya. This is the opinion of Rish Lakish. I'd like to just conceptualize this in one more way. Why are you bringing me cholent and potato? I want, here. You stopped off at the wrong store on the way over.
You can ask me now what a cheeseburger tastes like.
Okay, one more conceptualization just to try to visualize this machlokas. Imagine a person who puts on tefillin. And the tefillin we discover, and when he gets them checked, are totally possible. Not even a question. It's like it's missing half a part, whatever it is. Totally possible. So he puts them on the next day. And we say to the Jew, there's no good. You're not wearing tefillin. And he's going to say to you, what do you mean I'm not wearing tefillin? Look, I'm wearing tefillin. And he's wearing tefillin. He put them on. He has the boxes and the straps and the box. And he's wearing tefillin. Is he wearing tefillin?
No.
Agree to it? He's not wearing tefillin. In ritual life, in ritual life, it's clear when it comes to ritual that if the ritual that you're doing is pasul, you can't make an argument and say, but I'm doing the act. The whole act is a ritual act. Tefillin, there's no normalcy. No one else in the world wears tefillin. There's no word for it other than the ritual act of wearing tefillin. So if the tefillin are no good, you can't make an argument to me and say, but I'm doing it. I'm doing it. You're not. If it's ritually invalid, then you can't say, I'm doing the act if you're not. But in certain things that we do in halacha, the world of practicality, real life, intersects with halacha. Like eating, for example. Here, is it so clear that the halacha can dictate what I did? We can all agree that halacha will dictate, I didn't wear tefillin. If the halacha says it's pasul, I didn't wear tefillin. I'm wearing them. You're not wearing them. You're just not wearing tefillin. What about a simple act like eating? Can the halacha dictate if I'm considered eating or not? Eating is just a normal act. I ate half a shear of a cheeseburger. It was only half a shear. So can the halacha, in the same way that it told me I put on tefillin, and the halacha says to me, no, you didn't. Can the halacha say to me, you didn't eat. You didn't eat. You ate less than a shear. That's not called. It's not called eating when it comes to eating matzah and Pesach. It's not called eating when you eat treif. Or do we say, no. Halacha can say you're not wearing tefillin, but you can't say you're not eating. You ate. You put food in your mouth. So this is the machlokas of Yochanan and Reish Lakish. It's fascinating machlokas.
One is a mitzvah asay, one is a mitzvah.
Correct. So good. Anyway, that's where I was working through. So when it comes to the lotas, the prohibitions, that's where we have this issue. Everybody would agree by the asay, whereas you tried to eat matzah, you ate a little bit of matzah, but you didn't eat enough to be yotzei. But there's no problem. You haven't filled the mitzvah yet. But when it comes to a cheeseburger, so can I purposely eat less than a shear? So Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the food is intrinsically forbidden. Reish Lakish says, food's not intrinsically forbidden. Eating a kezias is forbidden, and you didn't do it. So no, just that's the machlokas. What gut reactions? Tell me which strikes you as, if you had to choose, what strikes you as the winning argument? Which side would you take in Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? That the food is intrinsically forbidden at any amount, we just punish you at the shear, or that the purpose of the shear is to say that's what's forbidden, less than that is not considered forbidden. No, just give me a gut reaction. Rabbi Yochanan Shlakish. Rabbi Yochanan. Intrinsically, yes, sir. A gut reaction. You're already too late. I don't want I just want your gut reaction. No,
because somebody told me many years ago that it's a shear in the rice, so I don't know.
Well, that's our discussion.
I understand that person did not present both sides of the argument, so I'm always under that impression.
Like Rabbi Yochanan, that's forbidden.
Yeah.
Rabbi Yochanan, you had a gimme gut reaction?
I don't know whether
Hashem
told us not to eat, so whether you eat less, I would say. Still.
You would hear like Rabbi Yochanan, not like Rish Lakish conceptualizes it.
I go Rabbi Yochanan, but the reason is why. I think the reason why is because it may lead to a person.
Okay, that's not enough. That's not good. In other words, that would be a rabbinic argument, which we'll see something like that. I want to know on a you can't without using that rationale of protecting for something intrinsically when the Torah said do not eat and we have a Mesorah that it's a Kazayas, does that mean that that's where the prohibition starts or that's just where the punishment starts?
Actually, my gut reaction would be to go along with Reish Lakish.
Reish Lakish, a Reish Lakish soul.
Because there's a certain consistency there.
Like I'm paying, you know, if you say you didn't eat on Pesach, then you say I didn't eat on a cheeseburger. That excellent. So, you got reaction. What would you go? Which strikes you as more?
My mind's telling me about like
Reish Lakish, like Reish Lakish, like Maish.
But then think about
it doesn't feel right. I know. I can't. Yeah, our kishkas can't conceptualize that. But let me give you one. Let me give you another example. One more example, because I just find this fascinating. There is a halacha called bittul. That if you have a prohibited item that mixes together with a permitted item under certain circumstances, the forbidden item becomes nullified as if it's not there. So the classic example when it comes to liquids, like a cholenti stew, the number, of course, is 160th. If a drop of milk falls in the cholent pot and there are percentages where there's far more than 60 times cholent than there is milk, so we can nullify the milk and the cholent is permitted. Bad. Now, do you have to take out a random drop from the cholent? No. Wherever that milk is, becomes like it's not there, and you're allowed to eat the whole thing. It's nullified. It's mamish bottle.
Some things are bottle even with much less than
that. Okay, excellent. Now, that's when it comes to liquids. This percentage is 1 in 60. When it comes to solid foods, like say a raw piece of meat, it's called the percentage is bottle berov. All you need is a majority. So it's very clear in halach. The Gemara talks about this all the time. So if I have 3 pieces of raw meat that I bought, and one of them was treif. I bought it for my housekeeper. Passed the deal. I bought a raw piece of meat from and I have 2 kosher ones, and they got mixed up together. No way to identify what they are. But I know that 2 out of the 3 pieces of meat in front of me are kosher. They all look the same. Same cut. Impossible to know. What's the halacha? So halacha is batel b'rov. I have a majority of. I don't need 60 because it's not like we're going to get mixed in together. It's solid foods, batel b'rov. Question, however, is how do I now eat this meat? So there are 3 opinions in the Rishonim as to what do we do now. It's clear that the halacha is mutter. Question is what's mutter? So one opinion says you're only allowed to eat 2 out of the 3 pieces. That's all that you can eat because
the.
Any 2 of the 3, and the fact that we say batel berov allows me to. Without batel berov, I would have said can't eat anything. I'm not allowed to take a risk like that. The fact of batel berov allows me to eat 2, and say the one that I didn't eat, I can what's called being tola. I can assume that's the treif one, but I can only eat 2 out of the 3. That's one opinion. Another opinion says you can eat all 3, just not simultaneously. You eat 2 at one time and say the 3rd one must be the one that's treif. And then after you finish the first 2, then you can take the 3rd one and say probably one of the other 2 was treif and this one. So I could actually eat all 3 through the halach of bittul berov. I just have to do it at separate times. The 3rd opinion says you can eat them all together at the same time. You all say that. How can, same, one of these 3 we know is treif. How can it be possible that I could eat all 3 at the same time? Batel berov says it became swallowed up in the whole, like the drop of milk in the meat, and they are all mutter. Now, that approach says that the halacha dictated what the food was. A Rabbi Yochanan soul who says that the meat is intrinsic would have a hard time with this. Like just like the treif meat is intrinsically usher, forget about the shear, it's usher meat. In this case, we have what's literally, it's usher meat. It got mixed up with 2 other kosher pieces of meat. And now I can eat all 3. What happened to the treif meat? Why am I allowed to eat it? I know I'm eating treif. You're not eating treif. The halacha said, they're mutter.
Like
appear to accident. The guy even a trade.
Question: did you eat trade for United?
100%. I'm only bringing it as an example of where the halacha can dictate the way we treat the reality. That even though I know, again, there are three opinions exactly how do I treat that meat. I know one of these three is treif, yet I come out of the equation and I eat all three. And according to some opinions, even simultaneously. So I'm just, again, just conceptualizing how halacha interacts with reality. So we have here a discussion of, I have less than a kezayis of a cheeseburger. What is its status? Rabbi Yochanan says, it's a cheeseburger. It's a cheeseburger. Torah doesn't allow you to eat it. We'll only give you malchus if you eat a shear. Reish Lakish says, I don't see a cheeseburger right now. I think it'd be more accurate way of saying it is, if you ate it, I didn't see you eating a cheeseburger. That's what he would say. It's a cheeseburger. He just said, you didn't eat it. The Torah forbids you to eat a cheeseburger. You didn't eat a cheeseburger. You, I don't know what word we use, consumed, you didn't eat. And the Torah only forbids eating. Fascinating machlokas. I think the whole thing conceptually is an amazing machlokas. Now, let's relate that to Yom Kippur. So we have a problem in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said a very low-level language to describe the prohibition of eating on Yom Kippur. It said aser, forbidden. You know what? Forbidden is, it's not aser to eat on Yom Kippur. You're chayv kares if you eat on Yom Kippur. So Reb Eel explains, first answer of our Gemara, you know what our Mishnah is talking about? Our Mishnah is not talking about really eating a gezunta meal on Yom Kippur, because if you ate a gezunta meal on Yom Kippur, you'd be chayv kares, and we would have said it. Our Mishnah is talking about where you ate chatzi shir, you ate, and in that's all you ate, then the language of aser is appropriate, because you wouldn't be chayav karis for eating less than the shir, it's only forbidden. Now, with all that we just said, according to whom would this answer of Reb Eila work, that the Mishnah is talking about eating less than a shir, and that's why it used the language of aser? Who holds that eating less than a shir is aser? No. It's Rabbi Yochanan, right? Only Rabbi Yochanan holds that it. So the Gemara, so what the Gemara is about to say to Rabbi Eila, nice suggestion that our Mishnah is only talking about a chatzi shir, but that only works if you're a Rabbi Yochanan soul. If you hold like Rabbi Yochanan that a half a shir is indeed aser min haTorah, you're not allowed to eat it, then you can say, oh, that's what our Mishnah is talking about. I'll make a special okimta, I'll make a specific case that our Mishnah is talking about. It's talking about eating chatzi shir. It's aser, and that's why we use a low language. But according to Reish Lakish, what's the deal of eating less than a shir on Yom Kippur? No problem. Torah said to afflict myself. I didn't cross the threshold that would be considered not afflicting myself. There's no problem. So he wouldn't teach this mission at all. He wouldn't use the word aser, because if we're really talking about doing less than a shir, it's actually mutter. It's not forbidden. It's a permitted. So the Gemara questions Rabbi Eila, nice suggestion, but it only works. Hanicha leman d'amar chatzi shir aser min haTorah. That only works according to an opinion that says, indeed, eating less than the amount is aser min haTorah. But according to the opinion that holds eating less than a shir is actually mutter, it's permitted, what are you going to say? How are you going to read the Mishnah? And the Mishnah brings the machlokes in Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Hanichle Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish Michael Meimar. So the Gemara answers, and with this we will conclude for tonight. The Gemara says, even Reish Lakish agrees, Reish Lakish again who holds that it's permitted, afila Reish Lakish moide she osur midrabanan, that on a rabbinic level, it would be forbidden. Like what Phil suggested. That even Reish Lakish says, does the Torah forbid me from eating the cheeseburger? No. It's less than the amount. The Rabbanan came along and they said, no way, no how are we allowing you to go and eat. You know what you could do then? All day long, you'd have every 10 minutes, you'd have a bite of your cheeseburger, and there would go the halachas of kashrus. Will that work? No, because you're going to keep pay attention. It was 10 minutes, it was 5 minutes, it was less than a kezayis, it was more than a kezayis. That'll never work. Now, I don't even know, he may have had other reasons, but it's clear, Reish Lakish, even though Reish Lakish holds on a Torah level, conceptually, it's mutter. Practically, Chazal came along and they said, no way. Even Reish Lakish agrees to that. That would be asumid rabbanan. So in other words, we would then have the question of, if I had a bite of a cheeseburger in front of me, can I eat it? Rabbi Yochanan would say, the Torah forbids it. Reish Lakish would say, only the rabbis forbid it. The Torah allows it, but the rabbis forbade it. Therefore, says the Gemara, that fits like Rabbi Ila. Can we learn our Mishnah now, both like Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? Sure we can. Because even Reish Lakish would agree to the line that it's aser to eat on Yom Kippur Achatzi Shir. The only difference between the way Rabbi Yochanan would read our Mishnah and the way Reish Lakish would read our Mishnah is, how forbidden is it? Rabbi Yochanan would say, when the Mishnah says, according to Rabbi Ila, that it's aser to eat on Yom Kippur, why do we use a low level of iser, not a high level of chiyuv karet? We're only talking about half a shir. And when we say it's aser, on what level is it aser according to Rabbi Yochanan? Aser on a Torah level. Reish Lakish would say, I agree to your reading of the Mishnah. It's referring to only a person who ate half a shir, because if it was eating a full shir, we should have used the language of chayiv kares. We only are referring to a case of a person who ate half a shir. Why do we use the word aser? Because it is a low-level iser. And according to Reish Lakish, how aser is it? Only on a rabbinic level, not on a Torah level. But he would agree that even the Rabbanan would forbid eating less than the measure that is prohibited. And therefore, we would now have, between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, a conceptual machlokas on a Torah level. Everybody would agree it's forbidden. The question is just on what level, on a Torah level or on a rabbinic level. The Gemara Mishnah next week will then address whether or not this works for us. This understanding of Reish Lakish works, and whether or not the understanding of the Mishnah works, of this idea of how to read our Mishnah. The discussion of the conceptualization about half a shear, that's a topic beyond our sugya. That's fact. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish conceptually argue on how to visualize or conceptualize eating less than the amount on a Torah level, and then we'll get to whether or not if Reish Lakish indeed agrees on a rabbinic level. Meretz Hashem will pick up next week.